Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and I'd like to invite you to step back in time with me to the 28th of May 1982, when, for the first time in history, a Bishop of Rome set foot on English soil, 4 centuries since the break of the Church of England with Rome. That was 30 years ago, and the Pope was Blessed John Paul II. But while this apostolic visit had been scheduled long before 1982, at the last minute, owing to the dire circumstances of the Falklands War, it was almost called off. So beyond the historical dimension, as well as the pastoral one, which was centred around the 7 sacraments of the Church, the hallmark of this 6-day journey which took him to England, Scotland and Wales was his constant call to peace and reconciliation. But why don't you listen to this programme I've put together with the help of our Vatican Radio Sound Archive, but also with the memories of some of those who were there. They're the Archbishop of Liverpool, Patrick Kelly, and Catholic author Joanna Bogle. Stay tuned.
. 2012 marks the 30th anniversary of this remarkable event in British history. And I think at the time we all knew it was extraordinary because no Pope had ever visited Britain. And these were the very words that John Paul used: for the first time in history, a Bishop of Rome sets foot on English soil.
Let's listen to him pronouncing those very words. It was at Holy Mass in London's Westminster Cathedral and during the homily.
For the first time in history, a bishop of Rome sets foot on English soil.
As we just heard from the recording, the applause went up after pronouncing those words. That's before Pope John Paul II had the time to add how deeply moved he was at this fort, and going on to describe England as a distant outpost of the pagan world with a tradition embedded in Christian civilization. But getting back to what I said a moment ago about this visit risking being cancelled at the last minute, it's because the timing coincided with a dramatic backdrop.
Of course, it was during the Falklands War, and so this huge reality had blown up across the South Atlantic. And there was a touch-and-go thing, would he come or not? And in the end, if you remember, he flew to Britain and also to Argentina so as not to be seen to be taking sides. And that the drama of all of that, a huge drama, and his pleading to stop the war and so on, that too made us somehow not quite get this hugely significant reality of a Pope. I mean, golly, a Pope coming to Britain.
My visit is taking place at a time of tension and anxiety, a time when the attention of the world has been focused on a delicate situation of the conflict in the South Atlantic. This tragic situation has been one of most serious concern to me. As I stand here today, I renew my heartfelt appeal and I pray that such a settlement of the dispute will soon be reached.
But somehow, despite this dark backdrop of the Falklands War and the constant appeals for peace throughout the visit, the presence of the Bishop of Rome on English soil was deeply felt among Catholics.
Somehow the massive significance of that got swept up. So our parish was Camberley in Surrey, and that's not so very far from Gatwick Airport. So parishes like ours all over Surrey and Sussex and South London were invited to send a coachload of people to Gatwick Airport to greet the Pope. And we had to get up at, gosh, 3 a.m, was it? Or something like that.
So you were actually there to greet him?
Oh, yes. It was thrilling. You could book yourself a place on the coach and you had to then turn up in the cold grey morning. It wasn't even grey. It was pitch dark. And get on this coach. And we arrived at Gatwick, 2 hours to wait there, but we had to ride crowds and crowds. And there was a warm-up sing-along thing. We're all going to sing this special song, which none of us had learned before, so we must spend an hour learning it. And the expression, the key words were, this is a family welcome. Let's give a big family welcome to Pope John Paul. And this was not a state visit. So the Queen didn't send a representative or anything, which was different by the time Pope Benedict came. We had this beautiful, wonderful papal visit with Pope Benedict. But with John Paul, no, it was a pastoral visit just to the Catholics. So he was greeted by the Duke of Norfolk.
The Duke of Norfolk being historically and traditionally the senior British Catholic, no?
Who's since died. I was your father, the present one. And he was wearing a frock coat, a morning coat and so on. And this meant more in the 1980s because we still had the House of Lords with hereditary peers in it. I mean, we still have a Duke of Norfolk, but it's, the whole thing plays less of a role in our public life. This is 30 years ago, it's a rather different Britain. And a much more traditional Britain. We all loved the feeling that the Duke of Norfolk, the senior Catholic layman, everyone loves a duke, you know, and everyone felt very cosy about all of that. So he went into the aeroplane to greet the Pope, and then he came out, and the two of them stood together.
I appreciate very much the cordial welcome expressed by His Grace, the Duke of Norfolk, in the name of Her Majesty the Queen.
And the Holy Father came down the steps and kissed the ground, of course, if you remember he used to do that. He was a fit man then, you know. He was well and strong, not as we remember him in his later days. And it was thrilling. Oh, it was absolutely thrilling. And then we all broke into this wretched song we had to learn, the tune of which now completely escapes me. And we all sang that and, you know. Then he spoke and this great visit began, this rich, warm tone. Oh, it was all tremendously exciting. We all cheered and cheered.
I extend to all the people of Britain my greetings of friendship and peace.
And I remember another memory. People had periscopes so they could look over the heads of other people in the crowd. You could buy these sort of long cardboard tube periscopes. And some people had made their own using rulers, you know, the ruler that you have at school. And we were all terribly tired by the time all that was over because we'd all been standing for hours and hours. And we piled into coaches to go back, but we all thought it was well worth it. And for the rest of the day, one followed this on television. Now, I had the privilege of also being invited to something else. He spoke to a gathering in the Cathedral Hall at Westminster, and there were representatives of different Catholic organisations invited, and I was invited because I was involved with a couple of different Catholic charities and so on. And that was different again. It was meant to be a rather more formal dress-up occasion, so one was formal and one dressed up. And he spoke to us from the platform there. And what I remember about that was that he met, among others, some Chelsea pensioners, you know, retired soldiers wearing their traditional red frock coats and tricorn hats. It was so sweet. And lots of people representing different Catholic groups. By then, the visit was well into its stride and it was a huge success. Mm. And he broke down many prejudices, I think. Well, there was this idea that, you know, Catholics aren't really very authentic British people and it's a funny religion. And it just didn't look funny. It looked warm and friendly. And there were these massive, massive, massive crowds. So obviously there were a lot of us. And to be British and Catholic, you know, is quite normal. And people discovered, which they had really known all along, that their friends and neighbours were Catholic. They kind of knew that, but here it all was. We were all talking about it. Well, what was it like meeting the Pope? And, you know, everybody in Camberley knew that the Pope had come and a coachload of folks from the Catholic Church had gone to Gatwick to meet him. It was kind of a normal thing, you know, it was a friendly, jolly thing. And in London, of course, he was a complete crowd puller. I mean, everybody lined the streets he went down in his Popemobile. and he had tea with the Queen, and she came out wearing this nice blue dress, and he had tea. And I remember it would have to be tea, wouldn't it? Somehow the Queen wouldn't give him lunch. Somehow it would have to be tea. That sounded so English. And there was this huge interest. What did they have? Was it cucumber sandwiches? You know, the proper thing. Of course, I don't know what they had. Probably it was listed in the newspapers at the time, but it all seemed terribly homey, terribly nice that he would have tea with the Queen. Of course, the Queen always does everything beautifully. So that was very beautiful and friendly. And then you could buy postcards, and people did in large numbers, very large numbers, postcards of the dear Pope with the Queen in this nice blue dress with her handbag over her arm, you know, how she always did, and white gloves looking so nice. And it made everybody feel safe. Oh, there's the Pope, you know, and there's the Queen. It was very charming.
I'll never forget, as the Pope Mobile drove away from the palace, Pope John Paul bowed to the Queen, and in that simple gesture he took away all bitterness. It was extraordinary, simplest of gestures.
But what was this bitterness?
The bitterness was just simply our heritage of, you know, the story going right back to the split in the time of Henry VIII and then the subsequent divisions and so on.
But was it very visible in England? Was it felt in England?
I think it was unspoken. It was an unspoken thing. I was then rector of a seminary, and I was involved in the Mass at Coventry, which was Pentecost. And the phrase I've always remembered, and the courage and the clarity, when he used the phrase, as you've said, it was during the Malvinas, the Falklands War, the scale and nature of modern warfare, whether nuclear or not, makes it totally unacceptable as a means to settle differences between nations.
Today, the scale and the horror of modern warfare, whether nuclear or not, makes it totally unacceptable as a means of settling differences between nations. War war should belong to the tragic past, to history. It should find no place on humanity's agenda for the future.
There was a stunned silence, and then the cheering began. It was the biggest crowd of the whole visit, was Coventry at the airport, and that was an extraordinary moment. And that's remained, in a sense, a very key element in papal teaching since then.
He made an impassioned plea for peace. So I do remember that. And he also said, people of Britain, I want you to remember that the Pope came here to remind you, to teach you, to pray. I want you to pray. Well, you might think that's obvious, you know, popes tell us to pray, you know. Yes, but it was a very simple thing.
I, John Paul II, came... The second came to Britain to call you to Christ, to call you to Christ, to invite you to pray.
And I remember he said, do not neglect Sunday Mass. It was very simple, pastoral stuff. I do remember that, because people were saying, why isn't he slamming abortion and so on? No, he came to Britain to tell us to pray, to remind us about Sunday Mass, to tell us to live the good way, the Christian way.
So the first historical visit of a pope was really quite homely.
Yes, it had a a homely, pastoral quality to it. And the newspapers and TV, no internet in those days, really understood and reflected that. And I think it changed forever the image of the papacy in people's minds. And it certainly brought together Catholics and Anglicans and so on in a very good and warm way, very ecumenical. That was very important.
My deep desire, my ardent hope and prayer is that my visit may serve the cause of Christian unity.
And so by 2010, you know, nearly 30 years later, when Pope Benedict came, he was able to work with that. And he had a beautiful meeting with people of all faiths, in which the Jewish rabbi, the excellent chief rabbi of Britain, Lord Sacks, gave a most beautiful greeting on behalf of all the other faiths. It was very, very, a very attractive, very, very beautiful encounter. And then there was also a beautiful gathering of Christians of different denominations in Westminster Abbey and the great bells pealing out. None of that would have been possible without John Paul. None of that would have been possible. And there is a great deal of goodwill between the different denominations. Whatever happens in the future, the Catholic Church will never be seen in any kind of aggressive triumphalist way. There will be goodwill, and I think that was a great thing. And these were no small achievements by John Paul and by Benedict. And I would say now a papal visit would now be regarded as a reasonably normal thing, in the sense that when the present Holy Father came, people thought, yeah, right, you know, that's what popes do. They come and visit us, which is extraordinary, because in my childhood that's not what popes did at all.
And that brings an end to this story, in which I focused in a very personal manner on Blessed John Paul II's historic visit to Great Britain. One in which he acted as trailblazer for his future successor to the See of Peter, Benedict XVI, almost 30 years later. With a stretch of imagination, both popes followed in the footsteps of another Roman pontiff who may not have crossed the channel that separates England from the continent, but sent an envoy there centuries earlier, precisely in 595. He was Pope Gregory the Great. His envoy being no other than St. Augustine. An episode mentioned by Blessed Pope John Paul II on the eve of his visit to the heart of the Church of England, Canterbury Cathedral, a momentous occasion in which he was received by the Archbishop of Canterbury of the time, Robert Runcie. On this first ever visit of a Pope to Canterbury, John Paul II, who participated in an ecumenical service, pronounced these words, quote, I come to you in love, the love of Peter. I come to you also in the love of Gregory, who sent St. Augustine to this place to give the Lord's flock a shepherd's care, just as every minister of the gospel must do. So today I echo the words of the Master. I am among you as one who serves. With me I bring to you, beloved brothers and sisters of the Anglican Communion, the hopes and desires, the prayers and goodwill of all who are united with the Church of Rome, which from earliest times was said to preside in love. Unquote. Pope John Paul II's pastoral visit to Britain lasted 6 days. It began on the 28th of May 1982, and it ended on the 2nd of June. Let's listen to him saying goodbye to the young people of Britain.
As my visit to Britain draws to an end, I am happy that this last meeting is with you, the youth of England and Wales, you who are the hope of tomorrow. I have come to this land as a pilgrim pastor, a servant of Jesus Christ. I have come to proclaim Christ's gospel of peace and reconciliation.
I hope you enjoyed this program I put together for you. My thanks go to my guests who made it possible. They're the Archbishop of Liverpool, Patrick Kelly, and Catholic author Joanna Bogle. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.